Tēnā mai, haere mai, ki tēnā hōtaka. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Nice to have your company this Tuesday evening. What announced today's stuff is to provide the 6 p.m. news bulletins to replace News Hub. That in just a moment. Are you excited about that prospect? Also, 2,000 jobs lost and counting in the public sector. Now, our guest today wrote a piece called Should We Mourn Public Sector Losses? His answer, nope. We talk about that. And selling off the family silver, I'm meeting tomorrow, opposing Wellington Council selling off its airport shares. And our question of the day today, people are sharing stories on this from BuzzFeed of what their in-laws have done to them. Do you have a story for us? So here's just one example that came through to the panel earlier. The mother-in-law of my own mother-in-law did the following. When her son was getting a vasectomy, she phoned her daughter-in-law to say, I was wondering if you would have your tubes tied instead. If he remarries, he might like the opportunity to have a son. They raised three daughters and I married one.
Oh, dear.
With us this evening, victims advocate Ruth Money.
Kia ora. Oh, dear. I have nothing to say about that, but oh,
no
dear.
One does. You're right. With us, Chris Clark, the CEO of the World Force Foundation, former CEO of World Vision NZ. Kia ora, Chris.
Kia ora, Wallace.
All right,
I'm Ruth.
So, yeah, keep your in-law stories coming. 2101, email the panel at rnz.co.nz. Well, Stuff and Warner Brothers Discovery have done a deal to maintain a 6 p.m. bulletin on Three. A one-hour bulletin on weekdays and half an hour weekends. Warner Brothers Discovery will pay Stuff for the product. It is understood that many media companies propose to provide the news, including News Hub's own staff. It requires 40 to 50 people. Stuff's proposal is understood to be more stripped back than that. So, an exciting new product or TV by iPhone with pot plants in the corner? With us, Miles Thomas, founder and trustee for Better Public Media Trust. Miles is also a key figure behind the Save TVNZ7 campaign, which was a public channel that ran for 5 or so years. Miles, kia ora, nice to have you here.
Kia ora, thanks for having me.
And News Hub is also very close to you, Miles, because you worked on that well-regarded and infamous Nightline show with Joanna Paul and Belinda Todd.
Yeah, back in the day, I was a video editor at TV3 when they first started in 1989. And, yeah, when we went through two receiverships, it's a channel that won't die, hopefully. We ended up doing Nightline on the bare bones, and we weren't sure whether anyone was watching it. So we just had a lot of fun, which was really liberating.
That's amazing. And in that way, history was made, wasn't it? And actually, worth pointing out that it actually did go into receivership in, I think, 89. So these issues weren't new. But this is really different, Miles. We are talking about a 6 p.m. news product. For someone who's worked in TV, what do you think? Can it be done?
Oh, well, I was feeling optimistic. And then when I heard that they are going to have less than 40 staff, I'm feeling a bit worried. But, you know, I guess it's just commercial reality, isn't it? That they have to cut the cloth to suit whatever they can earn. So, yeah, but I have to say it's gonna be different. It's going to be possibly a bit like Channel 39 in Dunedin, where their reporters shoot on their iPhones and send the footage back, and then it's packaged with the same two or three voiceover artists and so forth. But who knows what it's going to be.
Yeah, well, Channel 39 Dunedin, I've seen it, and look, it's a good product and I enjoy it. But I will also, Miles, it's really budget. And I think, as Mark Denning said, you know, it's 6 p.m. news requires a certain product and a look.
Yeah. I mean, exactly right. I mean, we have expectations. I mean, up against TVNZ's very slick graphics, and graphics alone, the department when I was there was five people making just the graphics for, and then you've got cameras, sound, and the studio staff and the presenters and the reporters and so forth. So who knows, maybe the solution is that they'll do five big stories in a per hour, which wouldn't be such a bad thing. I mean, that would be a lot, you know, you get current affairs, long, in-depth stories, and maybe they'll find a way to save money by doing it that way.
All right, on that.
I think that would be a good outcome.
Ruth?
Yes, Miles, so do I. Yeah. I think that would be a great outcome. I was just speaking to the gents before we came on air that for someone who works with victims, who whether it's your child that's been abused, whether Oranga Tamariki has uplifted your child, whether it's you're trying to name your rapist, or whether it's a leaky building, you know, the community needs a voice, and we have a real lack of long-form investigative journalism that's going on. So I'm pretty excited that, A, there is a solution. Let's see what it looks like. But the opportunity for voice is so important, as well as obviously all the democracy key drivers.
Miles, we've got Chris as well.
Miles, I liked your headline the other day where you talked about the fact that we'll have the worst TV in the Western world. And I guess two questions. First of all, was that a bit of a hyperbole, or is in fact, do you think that's the case? And then secondly, there's a theme through tonight, which is going to be about public servants. If you're advising Melissa Lee on the future of public broadcasting in New Zealand, what would you be saying to her she should be doing?
Right. Well, yes, we definitely have the worst television in the Western world. I mean, if you compare what we have to what they have in Australia, it's shocking. And with the fact that we're losing our last current nightly primetime current affairs show is evidence of that. But it has been a steady decline, and it was already the worst. I mean, if you look at a country like Ireland with the same population as us, they have a nightly new proper current affairs show each night, but they also have 3 to 4 weekly current affairs shows, and we've lost our last one. So, and I wouldn't say Seven Sharp is current affairs. So, yeah, I think we definitely do, but then that's because we don't spend enough money on it. But I do think that would be one obvious option, is that Melissa Lee could just spend more money and or consider it a disaster and put some interim funding into TVNZ so that they can keep Sunday and current affairs like Fair Go still going, and then solve the funding problem. There's plenty of ways that they can solve the funding problem. They could. The government is going to be requiring New Zealand On Air to remove or discount 7.5%, take a cut of 7.5%. At the budget, apparently, and RNZ as well. And we're very concerned about that. Melissa Lee could convince her cabinet colleagues to exempt New Zealand On Air from that. She could also look at one of the ideas we've been promoting for a long time, actually, is a levy or a series of levies that could remove funding from the annual budget, but would very effectively fund media. Our proposal is that it would fund, go towards TVNZ and maybe, and then the funding for TV3 and New Zealand On Air as well. That would then relieve the commercial requirements on TVNZ. And that would then have a ripple effect to the commercial media, such as Discovery, Warner Brothers Discovery, and TV3 and others as well, because all of a sudden there's all these advertisers who won't be able to advertise on TVNZ who will be looking for somewhere else to put their ads. So that would be beneficial to the commercial industry as well as to the audiences, because we won't have to have ads on TVNZ anymore, and so therefore TVNZ's quality will improve significantly.
I see where you're going on that. Yeah, and for those who live in Australia and who recalls that nightly current affairs show called 7:30, as you say in your piece, Miles, you know, here's a country that you can tune in, Ruth, to 7:30 and see a nightly 5 day a week current affairs show.
I'm just not buying. I keep hearing that New Zealanders aren't going to watch current affairs. Is that, what do you think about that, Miles?
No, I think that's rubbish.
Yeah,
I agree. We would.
Are you sure?
It may not rate as high as Married at First Sight, But it certainly is far more important to our democracy than married at first sight. It really does. I mean, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it? And what's important is that there is somewhere a vehicle to hold the powerful to account on prime time, and to see them squirm and see the whites in their eyes as they blink. So I think that's absolutely vital.
Miles, look, I'm really sympathetic to what you're saying, and I'm the kind of person who would really enjoy listening to a current affairs program, but I suspect I'm a little bit more abnormal. And the reason I say that is we don't have big protests. What I'm noticing is that there's real concern among the journalisms and TVNZ, TV3, all those kind of people, but we're not seeing mass progress to protests to save our television or to save our radio. It says to me that maybe we've lost the public, and we lost them actually a long time before we actually lost the programs. And so I wonder if, in fact, the real question we have to address is how do we rebuild public trust in public media, which would seem to me to be a much bigger question than actually what's the format of current affairs in New Zealand.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. It has been a slow loss, hasn't it? It's like a fish in the water, and the water's slowly reaching boiling temperature, and now we're losing it. And but I think trust is a separate issue. Really, and trust is, I think, much more closely related to social media and influences from overseas. But I do think that, definitely something needs to be done. We need a big change, and I think that big change really, I mean, and it's brought on by the fact that TVNZ is now making these cuts, and obviously we're seeing the cuts at News Hub, fortunately not completely, and stuff's jumping in like a white knight and hopefully going to save it or parts of it, which would be great. But definitely it's getting to a point where something's got to be done, and we think that thing should be right. A levy and removing at least some of the adverts, not all of them, but some.
Miles, I'd like to ask, because this hasn't really been discussed, but you were amongst, in fact, you were really the key person behind the Save TVNZ 7. For those who weren't around, it was a public channel that was going for several years. I think it ran for about 17 million bucks a year, so not big change in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And by the end of its tenure, it was getting about 1.5 million eyeballs a month. If that had been kept going, so this ad-free channel with this high product 8 p.m. news hour that it had with Greg Boyd, what would the environment look like now?
Well, I think, I think it would have made a huge difference to public education and just to the state of New Zealand. You know, we don't realise what we miss out on, and our public lack of public education, lack of engagement with news, lack of understanding of news, lack of understanding of the nuances or the reasons behind policies and so on and so forth. That's just in terms of politics, but everything, I mean, in terms of understanding how the other side of the tracks live and so on. And it really has a huge effect. And TVNZ7, if it was around, would have filled that gap. It's a huge gap that TVNZ7 left. Not to mention, you know, Wallace Chapman and backbenches is no longer with us.
Oh, that's just a small side note there, Miles. just a footnote.
Well, at least we used to with us, which is great, but backbenches no more, which is very sad. But, I do think that, you know, it really filled a really valuable place in New Zealand's broadcasting and media landscape. And it's a real shame that was lost, because it really would have made a huge difference.
Good to have you here. Miles Thomas there, founder and trustee for Better Public Trust. But to that point there, Ruth, you need to be able to sort of advocate for the people you represent to get a serious voice in the media.
We absolutely do. It's about holding people to account, and it's about sharing stories, and it's everything that Miles was saying. You know, we don't know what we don't know. And if we can't, if we're not interested as a community into what's happening in society, I'm really scared as to where we're going to end up going.
6:22, the panel, Ruth Money and Chris Clark joining me. Loving your company as always. Thanks for tuning in to the panel on RNZ National. By the way, we are on iHeart, Spotify, Apple, RNZ, the apps, if you can't catch it live. And to this, nearly 2,000 jobs have gone or are set to go in public sector, according to ministry documents and the PSA. The Ministry of Education, Oranga Tamariki, are expected to release information about their plans this week. More than 18,000 public servants have been added to the workforce over the past 6 years, with 2,500 in the last 6 months alone. Now, we've discussed this quite a bit on the panel, the heartache of redundancy, the losing of one's job. Our guest today says the cuts are a good thing and has written a piece on it, paying people to show up to a likely lavish office and just sit there doing nothing benefits no one, he says. With us, Hi Morna Gray, a public relations consultant, former NGO and health research comms manager. He writes for Metro and Spinoff and a former Wellington public servant himself. Hi Morna, kia ora, nice to have you here.
Kia ora, Wallace. Thank you for having me on.
So explain this, Hi Morna. You say it's what? It's simply a return to equilibrium.
I think it's sort of hard when you see these, when you hear these figures, you can sort of inevitably have this sense of shock and awe. And when you think about people losing their jobs, we're seeing more and more stories about this, or the absence of stories because of job cuts. It is quite reasonable to see any losses as something that's really, really heartbreaking. It can really challenge a family. But we also need to consider the scope and also the, what we're cutting. So if you look at the cuts to the Ministry of Pacific Peoples, almost half of those are for roles that weren't, that were vacant, as are vacant right now, actually. So how many of these roles exist in reality? How many of them exist in the form of roles and things like Three Waters, which is no longer going ahead? We're talking about hundreds of people working on programs that the previous government started in earnest, where it was quite clear that they were being scrapped, and that continued on regardless. So I think we do have to think about when we're considering job losses. You know, it's a hard thing to stomach, but not every job loss is equal. Not every job loss is necessarily cutting from somewhere where it is a vital part of what we do as a nation or as a public service.
Let's bring Ruth in.
Kia ora. I just want to say thank you for your brave piece. I enjoyed it, and I taitoku it, actually. I spoke last week on Radio New Zealand about a program, Te Puna Awanui, and also Te Orere Kura, which is gets $72 million a year for the last 5 years to prevent family violence and sexual violence in New Zealand. And it employs lots and lots of people, and there's lots and lots of consulting going on, and our statistics are getting worse at the front line, not better. And it's those kind of examples where, as much as Wellington, and it is sad that people are losing their jobs, but as much as the culture in Wellington is scared about the public service, or the cost to the public service headcount, I'm more concerned about the fact that there are programs that aren't delivering at the front line. So I really thank you for your brave.
Oh, okay. So you really agree with Hi Morna there. Chris?
Yeah, Hi Morna, thank you for the article. It certainly got me thinking. I'm going to mount a defence for the public service and for public service.
Go ahead.
I guess I did my time as a public servant way back at the start of my career. Do you know, the thing that struck me, and obviously got many friends who are still in the public service, is just the extraordinary calibre of many of these people. I mean, it's for many of them, it's much more than a job. It's a real sense that it's a vocation. A calling is a much overused word, but there's a sense in which they are absolutely passionate about the work. But it's also a very peculiar job, because they're not masters or mistresses of their own destiny, because they are public servants. They serve the minister. And so it's quite an easy trope to come up with the idea of these kind of lazy people who are running their own systems and have got their own agendas and so on. But actually, they serve a minister. And in many ways, I wonder if sometimes we're pointing the missile at the wrong target. I'll give you an example. During COVID, the thing that's really struck me about the public service was how responsive it was to ministers. In fact, it was agile, it was nimble, it was quick, and it took risks. That is atypical for ministers. Ministers are usually risk averse, they want a no surprises policy, and they want to make sure they're not embarrassed. That obviously is reflected in the behaviour in the public service. So my point is that much of the behavioural critique we make of public servants, I think, is more reflective of their masters than actually of the servants themselves.
Hi, Mola.
I think that's quite fair. Why would is how many of them are to, how many of them have the end master, to use this analogy, as the ministers, and how many of it is the head of the ministry itself? I was a public servant for over a decade. My immediate family of four people, three of us were public servants for, I'm probably not meant to say how long, my friends, they're our age and all of that, but yeah, for a combined 80 years. And in that time, we've met and I've worked with amazing people, some really bright, capable people who have really wanted to do something positive. What does happen, though, is the further you get into the public sector, the more you realise, yes, the ministry's priorities can shift around a government and around an individual minister. But also, at a certain level, you are working towards your immediate bosses. Right. You are supporting your leadership team. And so, really, how much of it comes down to ministers and how much of it comes down to a public sector leadership that is lacking, that been allowed to slip?
Did you think it was worth writing a piece about this? Because here we have these thousands of job cuts going. You're a former public servant yourself. Many would be listening to this going, oh, my gosh, you're just a heartless Dracula. Blood-sucking, thirsty Dracula who is dancing on the graves of people who've lost their jobs.
He's not dancing on. I'm gonna stick up for you, my friend. He's not dancing on any graves. He is saying the reality is that there are a lot of people getting paid to not output deliverables that are due, and that the community and the public money.
It's a small city, thousands being made redundant. Imagine the consequences.
It is.
That's all you can say.
It is hard for Wellington, but it's also the reality is that Wellington is a one industry town that's not sustainable, and it has been living.
Move the ministries around the country so that they can actually experience communities. Why they're all feeding off their own water cooler in Wellington is beyond me. Put justice down in Ototahi. Put, I don't know, MSD up the top. You know, we have to experience, and you're supposed to be representing the public. You are public servants and you are supposed to be representing the population. You are not doing that by living and breathing the same old avocado on toast in Wellington.
Now, Ruth, I actually agree with you on that point.
Oh, that's good.
I disagree a little bit on the sort of the trope on public servants, but I do agree with you in the sense of representation of the public. I mean, they are servants of the minister, but the most effective public servants I ever worked with, many of them worked in hospitals, by the way, where I used to work, actually had a really deep affinity to their community. So I think of ministries such as specific ministries where there is a strong connection to the community. And so the quality of the advice there is really good. Part of the trouble, I think, with Wellington and coalescing all these public servants in this one town with reasonably well-paid jobs is actually it's very easy to lose touch with the reality that's in Ototahi or other parts of the country. So I do agree with you on that point, but I'd still defend the profession of the public service.
There are some very good people in public service.
Well, one thing, Harmonia, you've done is put the cat amongst the pigeons this evening. So, God,
I'm glad I contributed that, at least, Wallace. Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate your time. That's Harmonia Gray there, a long-time former Wellington public servant, and gosh, yes, some texts here. Wallace, I know of people at Oranga Tamariki with years of valuable experience who are losing their roles. Skill and knowledge massively eroded. Children will hurt and die as a result because the front line will lack the back room and experience to deliver high quality social work is one of many.
I don't disagree with that, but the counterfactual to that is actually that is happening right now.
Yeah. And on that, we might come back to that. Actually, should actually some of these sectors actually be spread around the Motu and not just in Wellington? Thank you for that. Before we go to the headlines, keep that feedback coming around your in-law story. It could be kind, it could be less kind, it could be anything. Here's one. My mother-in-law would pass judgment on my housekeeping by checking my garbage cans and testing for dust on top of my fridge.
Oh, my goodness.
Keep those coming.
Maybe we should date the mother-in-law before we date the partner.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah. 2101, email thepanel@rnz.co.nz. Evie, I don't know if you can top that. Kia ora.
My mother-in-law's awesome. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.